Fred Film Radio.
International Film Festivals and Awards Macau.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the second International Film Festival and Awards Macau. And I'm in the company of author Lawrence Osborne, who is a member of the jury here at the festival. Thank you very much for joining us. Lawrence, does your presence here mark the beginning of your increased activities in the film industry?
It's funny, I've been a novelist this whole time, and I've been asked many times to do screenplays, and actually for years, and I always said no. I didn't want to get involved, because I know a lot of people, a lot of my friends who are in the movie business, a lot of my friends, I know a lot of actors and producers and so on. And I've always had, it's a very, very complicated business, and it involves a lot of your time outside of yourself, in a public arena, which I don't like very much. And also, you spend a lot of time getting involved with money things, and you know it's complicated. Getting a film made is very complicated. Whereas, if you're a writer, you just sit in your room by yourself and you close the door every day. It's great. That to me is the only thing I care about. And so now, but this year, everything has changed because I have options on all these books, and I've been made a producer on two of the films, so now I have to get involved with location and casting and all this money stuff, and just as I expected, my whole life has disappeared. I have sort of like 6 novels and 4 published and 2 coming, so now I had enough. So I think actually I'm going to take a year off and just do this other stuff and see what happens, you know. And also, you know, it's just, there's a lot of money in it, so it's great. I don't have to worry about it anymore. You know, it's like just thing on novels, you know, going from book to book, you know, always precarious, always broke, always, and then suddenly you're not broke. I was like, okay, I'll accept that.
But do you have an interest in cinema?
I have I have probably more interest in cinema than I do in literature in some ways. I mean, I watch a lot of films. But then for me, narrative art is narrative art. It doesn't matter. You know, you have novels, you have short stories, you have film, even, you could say, oral storytelling or, you know, radio. I think these are all ways of telling stories. And it's why painting and music are different. They exist in a different dimension. But the narrative arts are all connected. Because the thing about telling stories is there are certain things that pertain that always, and so when I watch film as a novel writer, I'm always technically interested in what's happening to me as I listen to the story and why I'm interested in it. And looking at the films that we're in this festival, it's the same thing. You always ask yourself, what's coming next, and can you anticipate it or not? And most of the time, you can. And it's a bad thing. You want to not anticipate what's coming in a story. And it makes you realize how weak your own stories are. That you may have made those same mistakes. A lot of these things are just craft. They really are. It's timing, rhythm, making something move through time, and that's a very hard thing to get right for everybody.
Now, you wrote The Ballad of a Small Player, which is set in Macau, and I'm reading at the moment. It's very good. Is this one of your novels that you will be adapting for the screen?
It's funny you should ask that, because when I leave this meeting, I go straight to my first script meeting about that book. But I haven't really thought about that book as a film yet. I've been too busy with other things, and I wrote it several years ago, so it's not necessarily fresh in my mind, actually. I didn't write it with any kind of movie in mind. It was very much a literary book, you know. And a kind of fantastical book in some ways. It's a fairy tale, so it's a Chinese fairy tale in some ways. So I'm quite surprised that they want to do it, but we'll see. You know, I'm not going to write the screenplay, I don't think. I think they're going to ask me to do it, and I'll probably think about it for a while.
But what prompted you to write a novel set in Macau in the first place?
You know, funny, you know, how stories begin is very interesting, because they don't necessarily seem logical. The idea, there's a little passage in the book where the girl, the female character, is remembering making an offering at a temple in Sichuan. And this was a temple I went to in Kham, which is the Tibetan part of Chinese part of Tibet. And I was doing a road trip for Vogue, of all people, with a photographer and two translators, and we were going from monastery to monastery, just filming and so on. But I was kind of out of it. I didn't really know why I was there. I was just getting paid to do it, you know. But it was a long trip. It was like a 1 month, because the roads are very bad. And we got to this place, this monastery, which is described in the book, in this quite terrifying place with these big forests coming down, these big rivers, and nobody there. And this strange monastery with about 30 monks sort of in there. And I saw my driver was a Tibetan guy, and he went into the temple and he dropped a yuan note, a roll of notes, into the floor of the temple from the second floor. And it was such a strange thing to see. I don't know why he did it. I couldn't ask him why. And that image stayed with me. I don't know why. It has nothing to do with Macau. But I had this idea, and I just thought, what if there was a girl from here who went to Macau? I guess that's what it was. So that was the beginning of that character.
So did you live in Macau? Because I know, and I'm asking this because I know you've written novels in the past that are set in places where you lived. So
I usually live in places. I don't do research for books. I hate that when you do, you know, guys, you know, they want to sort of set something somewhere and they go off and they do some research and they go for 2 weeks. It's bullshit. I don't think it works. You need to really know a place very well. But I had spent a lot of time here because, and a very long time ago, long before. See, I think with facettings in books, it's really good to go to a place many times or live there, but have no idea about anything, like a book or something. Like, if you go there with the purpose of making a book, it's fake. You need to live it first. And if you write a book, you do. If you don't, you don't. But the thing is, you already have it inside you, and then you can write the book. And it takes many years to go by. So I was in Macau maybe 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004. And I was working for the New York Times at the time, and I was writing about medicine and psychiatry in Asia. So they were sending me to these Borneo and China and Indonesia and Papua New Guinea, all these weird places. And I was always coming through Hong Kong or Bangkok, these two cities where I would use as my hub. And these trips in the jungle were so exhausting that I would always spend like a month in Hong Kong just to chill out and basically. And I got into the habit of going over to Macau. I was just curious about it. And when I realized it was so different from Hong Kong, I began to prefer it to Hong Kong. And I based myself in Macau instead. And it was a strange connection to have, but it was purely incidental. It wasn't for any reason. I was just curious, and I liked this whole atmosphere that Macau had, which has always struck me as, the Portuguese and the Chinese is not an obvious mixture. You know? Like the British and Hong Kong, because I'm British. The British went all over the world. So everywhere you go to Malaysia, it's the British and the Malays. You go to Burma, the British and the Burmans. You go to India, it's the British and the Indians. So I'm used to it being a hybrid British something. But the Portuguese did it in Brazil, I don't really know the places where the Portuguese were. And the Portuguese in Asia is just completely off the map, you know. So I found it very interesting to do that. The second reason I started coming to Macau was wine, actually, because I used to be the wine critic for one of the wine critics for Vogue. And I got interested in, this is later I got this job. And, you know, Stanley Ho has this huge wine collection at the Lisboa Hotel. I got the Ho family to, but anyway, Stanley has this reputation as a wine collector, and it's one of the greatest wine collections in the world. And people don't realize that it's in Macau. It's actually in Lisboa owns the greatest wine collection in Asia. It's like thousands and thousands and thousands of bottles. They even have a Hermann Göring's Nazi collection of Riesling, which I've actually seen. And they have it now as well. So they bought the whole thing. They bought this collection of Nazi wine with the swastikas on the label. And that was very interesting to me because you can't really find that kind of stuff. And that a Chinese collector would have it was fascinating to me. So I came to the Robuchon restaurant a few times and wrote about the wine collection, and that's why there's those scenes in the book that are set in the old Robuchon restaurant in Lisboa where they're drinking these crazy wines, you know.
So gambling wasn't one of the reasons?
Gambling later, you know, everything comes in a succession. So when you spend time here, so I would be at the Lisboa alone drinking a lot of wine, you know, it's weird. I mean, I didn't know anybody, and of course you're in this place where, and I'm a night animal. I usually work until 3 a.m. so I'm up at night. So here I was in a building where everybody's up at night. So I could gravitate from floor to floor. That to me was wonderful. I could just walk out of my door and there'd be like thousands of people doing this gambling, you know. So I actually began to get... I started playing Punto Blanco Baccarat, which is the easiest form of Baccarat to play because it requires no skill. I mean, you just turn three cards, bang, 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 bang. Well, I found it very therapeutic. Especially when you lose, it's quite therapeutic to lose money. I don't know. It's like our relationship to money is such a kind of thing. You always want to acquire it and hoard it and keep it and not waste it. We spend our whole lives neurotically obsessed with keeping money. Everyone's stingy. They don't want to spend this. They don't want to spend that. You're always thinking about what you can afford, what you can not afford. So you're always worrying about money all the time. So you go to a Chinese casino, and the Chinese also are also like this. They're also obsessed with money. They're keeping money and not losing it. Because money's a hard thing to make, you know. So to go into a casino and just lose it, it's extraordinary. Something inside you kind of breaks, you know, and you just surrender to it. I understand why people gamble. That's the reason. That's psychologically the reason, I think.
You're also a member of the jury here in Macau at the Film Festival of Macau. And so I was wondering, is this your first time in a jury? What's your impressions? Your experience so far?
Not the first time a jury, but the first time as a film jury, yes. It's much more enjoyable than doing books, because I find that in the book world, it's much more mafia-like. You get people sort of really root for one book, and they hate you if you don't like the book. And you wonder what's going on here, you know? Whereas here, it's very objective. We discuss the films every night over dinner. It's very civilized. Everyone has a different sensibility. Everyone has a different view of it. But we discuss the films very, very thoroughly. We go through all the things we liked, all the things we didn't like, and so on. I think film is one of those media which is like... I think stories have to be visceral to work. If you're thinking too much, if it's too intellectual, you've lost it. I think this is... visceral is a funny word in English. It just means something which is like a knife, isn't it? I think that's like... That intensity is the thing you're looking for most. The problem with a lot of writers and filmmakers is they're too intellectual. They overthink. And this is always a mistake. It never works. It's like people talking too much in films. It's like this sort of things are... It's too obvious. It's very hard to show but not tell by words. So the films that are good are the films that know how to do that. But I have to say, every film we've seen has been pretty good. I haven't seen a really bad film.
Thank you very much. And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.